Hi, welcome. My name is Nancy Gilbert, and I'm faculty at Elms College, which is near Bay State Medical Center. So this is a real partnership between academia and practice. We have absolutely nothing to disclose. We don't make any money for anything. You know how it goes. Today we're going to highlight the development of the disparities puzzle exercise, and then we're going to summarize how we've implemented it and our future plans in using it and how we've begun to evaluate it. Our goal today is to have you be introduced to the disparities puzzle as a teaching tool and have you see how students connect this exercise with their clinical field experiences and their future practice. So we've all heard about the need to teach about health disparities, starting with Healthy People 2010 and the Institute of Medicine report on equal treatment. In 2007, Smith and colleagues published a position paper which recommended three areas that needed to be addressed in health disparities education. And the disparities puzzle exercise allows for these three things. First, participants are able to examine their attitudes, such as mistrust, subconscious bias, and stereotyping, which they may bring to clinical encounters. Secondly, participants gain knowledge about the magnitude of health disparities, including the multi-factors that cause them, and they begin to discuss possible strategies to diminish or eliminate them. And then lastly, the participants may increase their desire to gain skills in communicating across languages and cultures. And Dr. Benjamin noted the importance of this yesterday in her opening address. We all face so many challenges in teaching, and two that I want to highlight here. One is when we add one more piece to our curricula, where are we going to put it? So this piece gets put into community public health nursing. And secondly, the challenge of facing today's students, also known as the millennials, the Gen Yers, or the Net Generation. Faculty generally come from the baby boomers, born between 1946 and 1964, and the Gen Xers, born between 1965 and 1980. And Sarah and I come from both of those generations. So we've had totally different life experiences than the millennials. They have been exposed to technology all their lives. They just do it like that. They also have been programmed into all types of group activities. There was no such thing as going out and playing. There was always a scheduled play group, this. So they really don't like the traditional lecture style. No sage on the stage for them. What they really prefer is using discovery methods and active engagement. Interactivity and collaboration are very important to them. They want learning to be fun and interactive. They gravitate to group work, prefer to work in teams. They value doing and discovering answers. They want to construct their knowledge. They learn by trial and error, and they feel that if they're just persistent, they'll get it. And they like to use visualization, simulation, and participatory training. And we have to do all of that in our set hours that we have with them. It's always a challenge. But now, how are we really teaching health disparities and cultural competence? Research has identified the most common teaching methods used in both nursing schools and medical schools. And over 63% of the time, it's by didactic lecture, just what we're doing here today. It's followed by group discussion and experiential learning through community activities about 50% of the time. Case scenarios and videos about a quarter of the time. And sometimes faculty, 15% of faculty, drag in an ethnic minority, and having an ethnic minority right in front of you is going to teach you everything you need to know about health disparities and cultural competence, right? And some students have the time and money to either take a health disparities standalone course or immersion by studying abroad. But do these major methods really meet the learning needs of the millennials? Not really. And what I have found is the disparities puzzle exercise as a teaching tool relates to the millennial styles. And let me tell you about my experience. And this is where it gets to be fun. I attended a workshop over 3 years ago that Sarah had at a statewide conference. And she used this disparities exercise. And I was a participant. I was lucky to get on Team A. And it was the most amazing learning experience I had in ages. And what was great was that the participants started giving all the information back to Sarah through their discussion. So I immediately went up to Sarah and said, Sarah, can I use this in my classes? And she said, of course. That was a Wednesday. I used it the following Monday, and I had the same experience. And I've been using it for 5 semesters since then. And every time, the students are giving me what I used to stand up there and lecture to them as a stage on stage with some group discussions and other things like that. So Sarah is going to talk to you about this amazing exercise.
I'm just going to stand only because the monitor is there in the way. Good morning. I've had the privilege over the last 3 years to teach health disparities to community organizations and members, to medical students as well as physicians. And some participants have expressed reservations or concerns about a health disparities curriculum. And some of this could be because they may feel that some of this information is intuitive. They may feel that this doesn't apply to them because they treat all patients the same regardless of race, ethnicity, or socioeconomic background. Or it could be that they may believe that health disparities is due to individual responsibility, so that if groups would just work hard enough, they may be able to overcome some of these disparities. So I wanted to create a model that would sort of dispel some of these beliefs. And it was an interactive tool that I started to develop that kind of demonstrates that different groups in society have different quantity of resources, and that the variation in the quantity and quality of resources leads to a variation in your ease for upward mobility in the US. So the less resources that you have, the more likely you are to remain on the lower rung of the socioeconomic ladder, and the more likely you are to experience health disparities. So imagine that you come to class, and the seating assignment is rearranged, and you're told that you're part of the A team. So this might be a team that might have attended a prestigious university. You walk over to your table, and there's a box with puzzle pieces in it, and it's a picture of the puzzle of the US. There are 80 pieces. All the pieces are numbered in the back, if you choose to use that resource. And you have no obstacles. You work cohesively in a small group with 1 to 2 assistants, and the assistants may provide you some positive reinforcement. Yes, you can do this kind of thing, and they will even help you complete the puzzle. But what if you come to class and you are part of the B team? And this team could be a group that might have had some college experience, or that they have a well-paying job with benefits. So you go to your table, and you have a box here with some puzzle pieces, and you even get the picture of the puzzle so you know what your goal is. But what you don't know is that you've received a moderately complex puzzle, and you have half of the puzzle pieces. And this half, they're numbered. But if you realize that you have pieces missing, because now this group has 100 pieces, you might decide to advocate for that, for those pieces. So you turn to your instructor and you say, I have some pieces missing, where are they? And the instructor will say, well, in order for you to receive those pieces, you have to answer some trivia questions. And for every trivia question that you get correctly, you will get more of the puzzle pieces, and you might be able to accomplish the goal. Now, you might have one assistant, and with this assistant may provide you some encouragement, but it's not going to help you complete the puzzle. But what if it's not your lucky day, and you come to class, and you're assigned to the C team? This is a team that might not have completed high school, or may have a low-paying job that does not provide you with benefits or health insurance. So you walk up to the table, and all you have is a box with some puzzles. You don't have a picture of the puzzle, so you have no clue what the outcome is going to be, and it's a high-complexity puzzle. You receive 1/3 of the puzzle pieces, none are numbered. And if you realize that you have pieces that are missing, you might, again, ask the instructor for the missing pieces. And once again, the instructor say, you need to answer some trivia questions in order to be able to get those pieces. And but what you don't know is that questions are almost impossible to answer. And the instructor will make you feel like, well, you should already know the answer, because, of course, anyone should be able to do this. You may not have an assistant, but if you do, this person may provide negative sort of reinforcement and will make your group feel like you if you just work hard enough, you should be able to complete the puzzle with the pieces that you've been given. So by this time now, the instructor has assigned everyone to a group, and this is based on when you come into the room, you select a piece of paper out of a hat or a box, whatever, and then randomly you end up in your group. And at this point, the instructor will select an observer and a reporter from each team. And then the instructor states that a prize will be given to the group that is able to complete the puzzle in 10 minutes. But what the group doesn't know is that the instructor will call time 1 to 2 minutes after Team A completes the puzzle. So after Team A, of course, expectantly, is declared the winner, we then go through a debriefing process. So this chart represents a summary of the components of the health disparities exercise and the distribution of those components across the teams. So what the students find out in the debriefing process is that the team assignment, the team name, represents various levels of academic achievement. The puzzle complexity represents the ease of groups to be able to accomplish their goal based on their socioeconomic background that might have been influenced by the economic history of the family. The puzzle pieces represents the resources that you need in order to accomplish your goal, and that might be a quality education, adequate housing, a well-paying job. And the trivia questions represent the challenges that groups have to overcome in order to move up the socioeconomic ladder. And the team assistants represent the human and social capital in the community that is pivotal in order for groups to succeed. So of course, if you're part of the A team, you have all the resources, so you complete the puzzle. If you're part of the B team, you have some of the resources, you may make some progress, you may even complete the puzzle. But if you're part of the C team, there's a good likelihood that you will make minimal progress to no progress at all. So after this part, we then move on to the discussion part. So what we wanted to share with you is some of the questions that we use to connect the puzzle components to broader concepts in health disparities. So how did team assignments impact your expectation of the success of your team? What does each team broadly represent in society? Did each team have a clear goal? Did all the teams have the resources needed to reach their goal? Are the teams equal in resources? What obstacles did the team encounter, and did team members feel that they had the capacity to accomplish the task? So what we've learned is that you can use the disparities puzzle exercise because it's easily incorporated into the curricula. It only takes about 20 minutes to complete the whole process, and you can use it with groups of various sizes. It's a mechanism for students to begin exploring key concepts of health disparities that can include provider bias, stereotyping to social determinants of health, and inequities in health outcome. It uses assimilation model, which is a good model to engage a new generation of students, and it allows for community-specific modification and application. So the puzzle and the name of the team can reflect the community, and it becomes much more relevant for the participant. And Nancy will now share the student's perspective.
So I'm taking you back into this classroom, and Team A wins. And I say, yeah, it's over, Team A wins. And so Team A says, yeah, we won. Team B says, oh, we're almost there. Give us another minute. And Team C says, this is absolutely impossible. And I say, well, that's tough. That's life. And I give them awards. So Team A gets this great basket of prizes. They have enough for them and the whole class. Team B gets the right amount of prizes, but it's mediocre. And Team C gets an absolutely insulting prize, and there's not enough to even share among their group. So after that's done, I start saying that this is a puzzle exercise to reflect disparities, and now we're going to process it. Using those questions, I want to just tell you about feedback I got last year. Team A sat back and said, we won. It was our laurels. We never sought to help and ask anybody if they needed help. We just wanted to get our prize. Team B said, we thought if we just had a little more, we could do it. And Team C said, you were so mean, we weren't going to ask you or anybody else for any help. So I said, well, now let's talk about the communities you're in. And it was the most dynamic discussion that happened. One team started saying, yeah, this is like if you don't have transportation, or it takes 3 buses to get to a doctor's visit. And then someone said, yeah, this is how diabetics can't get food if they live in the north end of Springfield, because all they have is Mendina's. They don't have Stop and Shop and Shop and Save. They just have this very little limited grocery store. Then they start talking about what kind of education the kids get. How many drop out of school? Do they have role models to stay in school? How does this affect their jobs, their incomes, their health insurance, and their access to health care? So I think, wow, you're really doing it. And this one group started to then say, well, and I said, well, what would it take you to move from one group to another? And they started just brainstorming about why people might not want to move from one group to community to another, or what they would need and how impossible it is to get that. So I want to share with you a few of the students' reflections. There are two reflections that the students gave right at the end of the exercise. One student wrote, "This exercise demonstrates the lack of resources that poor communities have. It also illustrates health disparities." The exercise helped another student identify the effects of subconscious bias and stereotyping, and that's what was mentioned by Smith that we have to get at. And he wrote, "This experience has helped me see that prejudgments can give a distorted view of how things really are. This exercise will help me in my future nursing practice by helping me remember not to judge people because of what they say." And there's plenty of other quotes that you can read, but I'm going to turn it over to Sarah for the conclusion.
So what we've realized is that implementing the health disparities puzzle exercise, it really provides a creative, interactive tool that uses simulation with debriefing and participatory learning to be able to engage a new generation of students to learn about health disparities and address inequities in health outcome. Our future plans consist of incorporating a standard reflection tool for use at the completion of the exercise. We want to develop an evaluation tool to determine the effectiveness of the exercise. We're looking to create a research study that looks at the impact of the puzzle exercise on the intent behavior change of health providers. And we want to explore designing a virtual simulation of the exercise to be used online with an interactive website, as well as also adding a skill building component in the exercise as well. Thank you. Yes. Both myself and Nancy will tell you very quickly. Myself, I have used in community organizations to begin the discussion of health disparities. People fall right into the typical role. So they start to behave like a team A. They start to behave, and this is anyone from various socioeconomic backgrounds, physicians, medical students, community. I've even done this with adolescents. Looking at reproductive health disparities, and that's actually the very first group that I tried it because I had to engage them. And they were very much into it, and really it helped to kind of get them engaged in the discussion.
Nancy. Yes?
For early on, do they think they have the same puzzle when they first start, or is the setup that
It's set up so that they don't even really think to compare, and it's only as the process goes on. Do they really understand?
Anyway, they usually don't, because the way that we've both set it up is that they have separate tables. So when they walk in, they just go to a table, they sit down. They don't know that that box is different from the other box. And it's not till the end that all of a sudden they realize, oh, I didn't know that. And actually, sometimes the comments of the those that are assisting actually helps, because if another group hears it, it actually impacts how they're going to behave. So that if that other team is winning and they're being rooted, they're like, why can't I finish it? So for the very first team, those puzzles pieces are all numbered. So if that's just an extra bonus. I happen to know so-and-so who works at this job and helped me make that connection. So if you want to use that, you can turn them all around.